Dare Baptist, Sufi Abi Bina, Dare Baptist, to try and establish different conclusions on a basis of debate is the process that the impersonalists excelled in. India became a philosophical battlefield when Buddhism began to develop in India. It took by storm because it was very much based on logic, and so many debates took place. It was Shankaracharya who then finally came with a response and who created like a philosophical foundation based on the Vedas to defeat Buddhism, and that is his credit. We hear stories about various personalities who were debating, and whoever was one challenged the other to a debate, and whoever was going to lose had to die in a slow burning fire, voluntarily, to step into that slow burning fire. So it was exciting. It wasn't just boring debates. There was some life to the whole thing. Anyway, somehow or other, Shankaracharya was quite successful in defeating the Buddhists. And at one point, they got tired of burning and decided to move over the border. And subsequently, Buddhism is not very much found in India today. It's really in the countries surrounding India. So, in that way, we are giving credit where credit is due to Shankaracharya. At the same time, though, Shankaracharya did not present the full understanding. And Shankaracharya's approach was basically an approach of logic. Logic was the principle approach. Bhajagovinda Munamate, Samprate Sande Kale, Nai Nai Rakshati Dukri Kale. Word jerkery. Trying to sort of draw different meanings out of Sanskrit words, and in that way giving various meanings to texts and so on. That was the main preoccupation of his followers. However, at the same time, we should understand that such logical wrangling is lacking in one sense. It is lacking satisfaction within the heart. Shankaracharya established the doctrine of Vivartavad. Vivartavad is basically based on one premise. And the premise is that if the Supreme is absolute, if Brahman is absolute, how can it change? How can the absolute ever change? Therefore, how is it possible that it changes in different forms and shapes? We see forms and shapes, but from scripture we understand that all the variety of forms and shapes are resting on Brahman. Brahmana pratisthanam. Sarvakalvidam Brahma. Everywhere we see Brahman. And thus, when we see variety of forms, Shankaracharya argued, then it must be illusion. And therefore, when we see a snake, right, we know it's not a snake. It may look like a snake, but it's not. It's a rope. Anyway, this was my old philosophy, in case you didn't recognize. So, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was by no means in agreement. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's response was the Shakti Parinamavat. Shakti Parinamavat, Parinam means result or byproduct. And Shankaracharya was stating that Brahman is the absolute. That is the supreme absolute. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was saying, no. Brahman is rather the jyoti. It is rather the energy of the Supreme Lord. It is the Shakti. Just as we are finding, hiranmayena patrena satyasyapi tammukam tattvam pushana bhavenu satyadharmaya drishyate. Please remove this dazzling effulgence that is covering your true face, as we find in the Isupanishad. So, Shankaracharya was establishing this Brahman is not the Lord, it is the energy of the Lord. And the energy of the Lord doesn't change, but his energy does. And therefore, he presented the philosophy of Shakti Parinamavat, that the energy can give up so many byproducts. And thus, Shankaracharya's philosophy, where it said, you see a snake, but it cannot be a snake because there's only rope. Shankaracharya's philosophy, you see material energy, but it cannot be, there's only Brahman. That energy, therefore, Shankaracharya's philosophy that the universe is false, Jagat Mitya Brahma Satya, the universe is false. That philosophy is rejected by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who establishes clearly, yes, not only is Krishna real, but the energy of Krishna is also real. However, it is temporary. And in this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu established his philosophy in the discussion with Prakashananda and his followers, the Mayavadis from Kasi, or Varanasi, as it's also known. This verse from the Mahabharata is pointing out that logic remains inconclusive. One philosopher has one interpretation, another philosopher another interpretation, and there is no end to the argument. It just goes on and on and on and on and on and on. If one tries to establish on the basis of argument what is the truth. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was saying, Dharma Shastra Jada Ami Yaichiloha Pinda, that as the result of preoccupying myself with the study of these arguments of logic from various scriptures, my heart became hard like an iron bar. That is the result. So everything logic, everything reason, but no room for the heart. Later, when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became a Vaishnava, he is quoted in saying that it is quoted in the Pajavali, the verse book which was compiled by Srila Rupa Goswami. And there it is said that we are not logicians, we are not great philosophers who have crossed the ocean of Vedanta. We are not expert debaters. We are simply the servants of a rascal coward boy. So this whole spirit had changed. Not that the Vaishnavas are not expert in philosophy, but yet their main interest is not only tattva, but there is ras. Without the combination of tattva and ras, how can transcendental knowledge ever be complete? If it is only tattva, and if it is only truth,
And if it is only philosophy, then where is the heart? It is Ras, just like in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is mentioned. What is the use of the words of a poet? What is the use of the arrow of a hunter if it doesn't pierce the heart and make the head spin? So, in this way, what is the use if ultimately the heart is not involved? Of course, the heart, yes, well, in the conditioned state, can be trusted? Mm-hmm. Not so much. But I feel it, yes. And, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, as they say in the English language. Right? The feelings, thinking, feeling, and willing cannot be trusted, because thinking, feeling, and willing are conditioned by the material energy. We are controlled. Prakriti kriyamanani guna karmani sarvasa ahamkara vimudatma kartaham vikimanyate. We think ourselves the doer of activities which are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. We're simply puppets. We're puppets controlled by the strings of the modes of material nature, and we dance according to the arrangements of the external circumstances. We develop different desires, suddenly, according to different stages of life. As a child, we want to play. As an adult, we have other interests. We remember Prabhupada walking in and past the children's playground and said, children's fairyland. And Prabhupada turned around and pointed with his cane to the city and said, adult's fairyland. Still playing, but now in a different way. But the tendency is still the same. Playing with the material energy. Playing with the material energy and trying to milk out some enjoyment, exploiting, and thus becoming hard-hearted, because seeing not only the energy for our enjoyment and as an object of exploitation, but also seeing living beings in this way. It is said that Agasura had developed a mentality where living beings had become utensils. So we can see to what extent the Agasura bhav is present, or remnants of it are present within our consciousness. Using others for our own gains, our purposes, not caring about them, a lust object, and so on. Suddenly forgetting there's a person. Suddenly forgetting there is someone with needs. Suddenly forgetting there is someone with hopes for things to achieve in life. Someone with a deal, ideal. Suddenly we forget a lust object. Now. Abuse of filling the blanks. So what to say? These things are the result of hard-heartedness. The Maya body is interested in dissolving the ego. That's his aim, because he says all ego is false. It is simply a product of illusion, this sense of self. And one, they say, and one has to come to the point of appreciating the oneness of everything, they say. Fine, right? But
And thus they want to merge with Brahman and lose all sense of ego.
However, we should the acharyas explain that actually the ego of the Mayavadi is the most inflated. In psychology, we find that Carl Jung speaks about swollen egos and shrunken egos, or the inferiority complex, a shrunken ego, and the swollen ego, a sense of like greatness and magnitude which goes way beyond reality. It's the most swollen ego is found in the impersonalist, who is thinking that he's become God. I mean, Prabhupada used the word puffed up. I mean, it's pretty swollen. It's a very infinitesimal living being imagines that he's become omniscient. I mean, that's quite a step, quite a distance between the two. So, in this way, the discussions had continued with the Mayavadis. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had explained the Vedanta Sutra in a different way than Sankaracharya. He had explained the Vedanta Sutra in a direct way. Sankaracharya explains the Vedanta Sutra in an indirect way. It says in Sanskrit, sometimes you have an expression where it says, the house is on the Ganges. So when you come across such a description, the house is on the Ganges, doesn't make sense, because houses generally are not on top of rivers. So then one can use inference. Then one can use indirect interpretation. It must mean the house is on the banks of the Ganges, although it doesn't say it's on the banks of the Ganges. So in this way, inference, indirect interpretation. But direct interpretation, if possible, is considered the superior interpretation. It is more faithful to the text, rather than interpretation. Sometimes interpretation is allowed. So Shankaracharya interpreted the text, although his whole approach was based on interpretation of Sanskrit texts and explaining it in a logical way. He could not explain the Vedanta Sutra in a direct way to reach his conclusions. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained the Vedanta Sutra in a direct way. The followers of Sankaracharya, of, in this case of Prakashananda, in that lineage, they were like blown out because they never imagined that it was possible for a direct interpretation to exist. Of course, in the Vedanta Sutra we find the aphorism Jamadiyasi Yantaha, that I am the origin of everything. And of course, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that very verse is explained. That aphorism is explained. Jamadiyasi Yatombiya Vitaras Chate Savikisara Kene Ramadivaya Alikavi Uyanti Yatsuriya Tejo Parimadam Tavani Mayogata Tisaganisha. Explaining very much that everything is emanating from the Supreme Lord. That the Supreme Lord is the origin of everything. So here we have it, Shakti Parinamavat, right there in the first verse of Bhagavatam, the very proof of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy, that everything, that there are byproducts. And that Maya doesn't mean that the material energy is Maya, but Maya means that the consciousness of a particular individual is covered by illusion. Naham prakasa sarvasa yoga maya samavita
And therefore, that person is not able to see Krishna and the blissful pastimes of Krishna and the blissful nature of Krishna and how simply Krishna is just living in his eternal pastimes with his endless, unlimited, eternal associates in unlimited blissful exchanges. Anandam Buddhivardhanam, a transcendental ocean of nectar, that cannot be seen by those whose consciousness is covered by illusion. So, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes a letter, and in that letter, he's describing Prahlad and Hiranyakasipu.
And he said, wherever Hiranyakasipu looked, wherever he looked,
Prahlad, where is your Lord now?
Father.
He is everywhere. Prahlad. Yeah. He's here, he's there, everywhere. Yes. Well, everywhere. So, he's in this pillar also here. In this pillar?
Yes, Father, he's also in this pillar.
And so on. Then we get the dramatic effects in the play. And Lord Vishrigadev roars and appears from the pillar. And so on. But Hiranyakasipu cannot see, and Prahlad can see. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta writes, Hiranyakasipu could not see the Lord anywhere, and Prahlad is seeing the Lord everywhere. He said, and we are in between. So that's interesting. In between Prahlad and Hiranyakasipu. Here we are.
And that's the issue. We may nicely chant Hare Krishna, but are we free from material influence? Are we free from the desire for sense enjoyment?
Not completely.
Not only that, are we free from the tendency towards impersonalism? Or is impersonalism also haunting us? Impersonalism is kind of has an attraction. Why does it have an attraction? Why would?
Because people like to argue?
No, that's not the issue. The issue is not that impersonalism is attractive because we like to argue, but impersonalism offers us a way out, escape. Don't worry. Don't worry about all this suffering. Don't worry. It's all illusion.
And by the way, you know, if that wasn't enough for you to sort of enjoy the whole thing, by the way, you are God. Oh, well. Yeah. It's nice to finally get some recognition. I mean, really, after all these years, you know, finally somebody intelligent, you know, who's understood my glory.
Yes.
In this way, it's attractive to the mind. That's why it's known as the last snare of mind. God, you never knew it, right? You are God, yes, yes. Yeah. Okay, God, please fix some of the material problems, if you could. So, what to do when God has become a toothless tiger, when God has no more power? Oh dear God, you forgot your power, the Almighty.
Here he is, the Almighty.
Forgot all his power. Who am I? So, there are obviously some very basic defects in that kind of approach and understanding. A God, a forgetful God, who forgets his divine identity, is suffering from what any any other old person in this world is suffering from.
Did I brush my teeth or not?
Just feel the toothbrush. Is it wet? Then you know. Oh God, Greg, this is the future. For some it's the future, for others it's the present. A senile God, right? A God who has finally become senile, right? A sour God, an old man who sits on a cloud, looks down to punish the sinners in this world. And why not? You know, he's like bothered by rheumatism and so on, he's got to take it out on somebody. Anyway, so let us just return to the all blissful Supreme Personality of God, who's eternally young, not plagued by any imperfections, not plagued by an old cranky body, no, not ugly either, you know, like some incarnations of God are certainly not the most beautiful. It is said that various incarnations of the Lord have a different quality of the Lord. Like it is said that Maharaj Prithu had the Bhupalana Shakti. He was empowered with the power to protect the earth. Mohini Murti and Balaram, they represent the beauty of the Lord. So, in different ways, different incarnations are representing different features of the Lord, the Shingare, his power. If you had any doubt about it. And in this way, but we see some who are claiming, or who have claimed to be incarnations of the Lord, who must be representing the ugliness of the Lord. Because they are ugly in comparison to Krishna, who is unlimitedly beautiful, who appears in his original feature, in his feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in this material world. Buddha-hum kabijanati, but the gross materialist will not understand. Avajanati mam buddha. The Buddhas, they do not know. They think, I've taken a form made of prakriti, of the material energy. But we understand by the mercy of the Mahajans, and only because of that, that Krishna is coming in his spiritual body in the material world and performs pastimes that are human and yet that are also transcendental. Krishna simultaneously, human and superhuman nature is very interesting. If Krishna was just superhuman, unlimitedly powerful, it wouldn't be, his pastimes wouldn't be so exciting. Just the universal form of the Lord, which sort of shows the omniscient, all-powerful feature of the Lord, who is just swallowing endless soldiers and who can just destroy worlds at will. That, Prabhupada said, that form is also Krishna. He says, but that is not the lovable form of Krishna. That is not the lovable form of Krishna. But this form, this human form of Krishna, that, the human form of the Supreme Lord, is the lovable form of the Supreme Lord. Close to the heart. He also has a heart and displays his heart. And not only is the Supreme Lord taking this human form, Manusun Dharmasritaha, as the Buddhas, they think, I've taken this human form. No, this is his eternal form. This is eternal, and the human form is simply now a perverted reflection of that image of the Lord. And simply, we connect with the Lord. And then what does it matter?
then what do the material circumstances matter? They may be real, but they are not very relevant. Because they're temporary. How do you make the best use of a dead bargain? Use it in the service of Krishna as much as possible. And where not possible, renounce. Just renounce. Just be renounced. And that renunciation goes deeper and deeper. Where we have to renounce everything. We have to renounce so many things we are attached to in the cause of giving up that which is not favorable for the service of the Lord. But we can do rakshishyatiti viswaso with firm faith in Krishna. That shada sapta viswas hoya, shada sapta viswas kahe, sudrida nischaya, Krishna bhakti sarva karma kritaha. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, faith means the firm conviction that when we are dedicating our lives to Krishna, that all good will come. And therefore we are here, serving Krishna and understanding, at least intellectually, how Krishna is all attractive, and at least reminding ourselves of his pastimes and his nature, and slowly becoming captured and realizing that no other way of life can compare, and everything else is simply Shama Evi Kevalam, a waste of time. So, with that, I'll end. Any questions? Any comments?
Maharaj, what is the destination of somebody who follows the impersonal path, and is that destination permanent or impermanent?
Clear from the slow-burning fires. But the Buddhists are in many ways, are in agreement on many points. They are in agreement on the point that jagat mitya, that the universe is false. But they are not in agreement about Brahman. They say Brahman is also false. That's also illusion. And thus, they are nihilists, or voidists, or sunyavadis, those who reduce everything to zero. So a self-realized Buddhist will go, it is explained, to the Viraja River, which is the also known as the causal ocean, that which is situated between Aridam and Devidam, between the material world and the spiritual. And there is the complete absence of the three modes of material nature. It's the closest to void that one can come. Yeah. Then, the self-realized impersonalist may attain the Brahma Jyoti. The spiritual world is made up of various planets. Half is known as Golok Vrindavan, the planet of the Supreme Lord. Then there are many Vaikuntha planets. And all these planets are floating in the spiritual sky, and the spiritual sky is not lit up by the effulgence of the sun, but it is lit up by the effulgence of the Supreme Lord, known as the Brahma Jyoti.
And this Brahmajyoti is the remainder of the spiritual sky. The impersonalist can go there. But the second, the next word. Anyway, Triasthavala Visuda Buddhya Arunya Kichina Rampanapatantyanapita Yusvatamurahaya. That one who has not taken shelter of the lotus feet of Arvindaksha, of the lotus feet of the lotus eyed Supreme Lord, he cannot find satisfaction within the heart, therefore will again fall down from the liberated state. Therefore, true liberation from birth and death is not eternal for the impersonalist. It is only temporary, at best. Most will never get to that state, and will stay still conditioned. So if one is still an impersonalist and stay conditioned, then there are so many different types of possibilities. One can go down, if one tries to, through meditation, to become completely oblivious to everything and anything, and write it off as non-existent, and just let every feeling in the heart die, one can actually take birth as a stone. And just stones also are living entities. At least some stones are alive. Maybe if one gets too stoned, it could also happen. Anyway, the ways of karma are mysterious, and I'm not here to kind of figure out how karma will move the various living beings from one birth to the next. Karmana vaidane trena yantudeva patite. It is by karma and divine arrangement that we want to the next body. But rest assured that if one is now cultivating that maya about understanding, one is situating himself in a state of aparat, in a relationship of offense towards the Lord, the opposite of devotion, the relationship of rather being abrasive in denial of the Lord. Therefore, one distances himself from the Lord, and it will continue for many months. So, it's not a desirable position. Therefore, the acharyas, the Vaishnava acharyas, are quite strong in dealing with this Mayavad philosophy. Because in the name of spiritual life, it can bring one to a doomed position of animosity towards the Supreme Lord. Any other questions?
We understand by the mercy of Maharaj's situation as transcendental, what is Maharaj?
Yeah, we understand by the mercy of the Maharaj. The world is deeply sunken in ignorance. Even in the Satya Yuga, people don't know the goal of life. What to speak of the Kali Yuga, when confusion is the standard, when there is no standard, when nobody knows, when you just don't know. Everyone will argue for any position. Anyone claims to be a Mahajan. Who are even the Mahajans? It's hard to say. So then, the age of Kali is a very confused age. It's An acharya is self-effulgent. An acharya cannot just be a bona fide representative of a tradition, of a disciplic succession. That is good. But an acharya must also be self-effulgent. By his own purity will he come back. Thus we see the Mahajans are conquering by purity, but not just by claiming that as their own property, but rather by explaining, this is the gift I received from the disciplic succession. And thus that combination of being a representative of the disciplic, of the bona fide disciplic succession, which is confirmed in scriptures, and subsequently being self-effulgent, that by realizing these, the fruits of the process described, that is how the acharyas can conquer. And that is how Srila Prabhupada convinced people, not just by good arguments, but by good argument accompanied by being an amazing example of it himself. It is that example that makes us take it. Right? Otherwise, you know, argument, yeah. Good argument, but I still don't know if I'm willing to give my life to it. But when there's a living personality that embodies these qualities, then. So this is the challenge for anyone who is a link in the parampara, not just to be a bona fide representative, but also to become self-effulgent. That is the challenge. And for that one has to go deep and be ready to renounce everything. And just see that everything is fine. Renounce all misery. Just renounce all depression. Renounce all frustration. Just renounce all anger. Just renounce all desires to enjoy foolish things. Just renounce. That is the requirement, as my spiritual master likes to say. It all comes out in the wash. And life is the wash.
Thank you very much for your wonderful lecture. I just wonder about this, the Agasura mentality, that I'm sure we all have experience of agasuras, and then you know how to survive such exploitation and abuse, and at the same time remain. I mean, not become like an impersonalist who just renounce everything, but at the same time we also need to continue somehow having a heart. A soft heart, because we need to have that soft heart in order to love Krishna.
Mm. So. Anyway, abuse is very disgusting, and as I said, yayedam bhavyate jagat, exploitation is what the living beings are into in this world, and it goes beyond just the material energy to exploiting living beings. It becomes even more distasteful when such exploitive mentality enters into the relationship between devotees. But at the same time, it must be expected that it will be there. It's inevitable, because we bring with us in our hand luggage our material conditioning, our contamination, doesn't go away. So in that sense, we must learn to forgive. One feature of renunciation, which everyone has to renounce, every Vaishnava has to renounce, is a sense of anger, a sense of I am the victim. I am the victim. When there's abuse, there's two. There's the abuser and there's the victim. And many of us are professional victims, right? Living a life as in that conviction. I've been abused. But we have to, how can we rise above that trap? How can we get out of that cage? The I'm the victim cage that locks us up for years and that will not allow us to be free and to enjoy it at Krishna's lotus feet in pastimes and service to Him. How can we get rid of that victim mentality? Only forgiveness. Only forgiveness can do it. If we forgive, if we just really. And to forgive, we have to be very generous and to see. That abusive mentality is also in me. Whether I let it out to the same extent or whether I kept it inside. But that tendency is also there. Look at children. They're not only sweet, they are cruel to other children many times. They haven't yet learned how to edit their behavior, you know, just to conform to a social norm of like being a nice and civilized person. They are just the animal that we all are. Right? So, how about that? But to learn to forgive is the only way to get, is the only way we can rise above this, the remnants of abuse that still are with us. The cage of the victim. It's like another trap. So much to renounce. It all comes out in the wash. We must leave all these things, the positive, the negative. We embrace both positive and negative. Right? The negative also is not only that we suffer from our material desires, we also embrace so many negative things in us, like my property. You know what I'm saying? I am a victim, and therefore I cannot be expected to rise to all these, you cannot demand this from me because I'm a victim. Yes, I'm a victim. Nobody, one is only a victim of the illusory energy. We're only victims of the illusory energy, of nothing else. So we can let it go, forgive. That's the only path out of that, I think.
But forgive is not that difficult. But then to
forgive is very difficult.
But I mean to see the person.
Externally we can forgive, that's social forgiveness. Yeah. But to really forgive means to see the person. I met the person who arranged for me to be shot in the back, face to face. He paid the money. I know it very well. I had to forgive.
But then the other thing which comes is, then you see the same person doing the same thing.
Oh yes, Krishna will take care.
So.
Am I the one who's going to purify the world from all the crimes? Am I the one who's going to set everything straight? Me, you know, the great purifier, the white knight on a big horse. Oh, I saw this cartoon of the knights who got off the horse. A young lady was sort of looking at him. Then he got out of his harness, and he was an old man with a belly and a bald head. In the harness, he still looked good. But as soon as he took it off, old man with a belly. That's what's going to happen to every knight. How long can we fight? All the injustices of the world one day will just be exhausted and say, well, you know, injustice. I reckon this material world is a broken car and you can't fix it. You fix one thing and something else breaks. One of those cars. Just look on the parking lot. Yeah.
But do we become impersonalists then?
Do we become? No, we turn to Krishna. We turn to Krishna and we try. We don't become impersonalists. We turn to Krishna and glorify Krishna. Sometimes when it's within our power, we speak out. And other times, we just let it go. We don't join the fire brigade. We don't try to put out every fire. That's not a way of life. No. Like a tortoise. We go in the stream. Sometimes the legs come out. When it makes sense for Krishna, we'll speak up. But, you know, you can't be with the fire brigade. There's too many fires. Samsara, the Havana, the name of the hookah. It's an overwhelming forest fire. Get out of the way. Get out of the way. It's too many. Chant Hare Krishna. Deal with what you can. Yes.
Yes, in this regard, Kishori Mataji, whose children have been severely abused in the 70s, she told me that, of course, Prabhupada himself had sent her children to Dallas in 72, and she denounced how far they were abused, and because of that, ISKCON Gurukul Dallas was closed. And for years, she could not relate how is it that Prabhupada himself sent the kids, how is it they were abused. So, and for years she was keeping that misunderstanding within herself. And then she asked Prabhupada, why? He told me to send the box. And Prabhupada explained that still they have their own destiny.
Still they have what?
Their own destiny.
Uh-huh.
As, you know, as jiva. Mm-hmm. So, and then finally she reconciled with herself. It took her years. Still, they have learned this to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and Prabhupada had to try to establish a movement out of nothing in the middle of nowhere. Right? All at once in old age, you know, when he was like virtually like the very end of his life. Everything had to be done fast and everything had to somehow or other be started, even if it wasn't perfect. But the Gurukulas were not perfect, but at least they had to be started. Huh? Some Gurukulas came out okay. Isn't it, Nimai? Like?
Surviving.
Some were never abused. Yeah? Just didn't happen. Amazing enough. Because they all have their own destiny, as Prabhupada said.
Yeah, but that's how we can forgive.
Okay. Anyway, we've opened Pandora's box and we're just closing it now. Thank you very much.